swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
And he swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss! Strike three, it's over!
The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 116. This is the official podcast of just being grateful for Dom, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe, rate us 5 stars. We really appreciate when you guys do that. As always, you can also watch it on YouTube or on the WEEI channel in the Play Tessie playlist, and you can hit the thumbs up on those videos. And then after you do that, go and subscribe on a podcast platform, because that's what helps us out the most. And I know you guys really want to help us out. Here with Sammy, here with Joe, who's in for Pat today. Sox split the series against Baltimore, lost the finale, but did split the series, which is all we, I think, really could have asked for. I know that to make a run and to get to the playoffs, the Red Sox are going to have to rip off a bunch of wins in a row. I don't necessarily know if that's going to come in this 10-game stretch in which the Red Sox have four with Baltimore, three with Houston, and then three with Arizona. So they basically got to stay afloat there. The issue is the Royals keep winning and the Twins keep winning. As of my last checking a few minutes ago, they were tied in the ninth. I don't know if that game, that Twins game, is over yet. If any of you guys, Sammy,
10th inning. I'm turning it on as we speak. I'm putting it on so I can live react for you guys.
Yeah. Give us the live reaction if you get it. But yeah, I mean, I can't complain with a split. The second game just like had us off the rails. But when it's all said and done, the Red Sox take two against the team that I personally think is the best in the American League. It's certainly the best built in the American League today. So I'm not going to complain in that regard. But that being said, they're 3.5 out as we record right now from a playoff spot. Like, this is like, it really is getting to be go time. I know it's only three back in the loss column, but 3.5 back, you go on a quick cold streak, and then all of a sudden you're 5, 5.5, 6, and then that's when you call it right there. Like, if they get 6 back, they're not making it back from 6 back. So they really have to get going. They have to start winning ball games. The schedule lightens up after these next 6 games against Houston and against Arizona, but to me, got to take at least 3, and their goal really has to be to win both series. Take 2 out of 3 in both series. Find any way you can to do it. I know they've got reinforcements coming, but if they come and the Red Sox are 5.5, 6 back, I don't know how much they can do. But that said, they could have easily lost the series against Baltimore. Like I said, game 2 definitely could have gone the other way. Baltimore is, I think, the better team. I don't think anyone would disagree with that in the Red Sox split. So it's not a negative podcast at all in that regard. But again, like, we need to see them rip off a bunch of wins in a row, and hopefully that's going to come soon.
Yeah, that's the frustrating part, is that you're okay with a split. We didn't expect them to, you know, dominate the Orioles, like you said. Probably a better team than the Red Sox. The problem is Kansas City and Minnesota. They keep winning for the most part. So while you do split, you're not really, you know, I guess you could say you're trending in the right direction, but you're not making up ground. On the contrary, you're losing ground. So these two series, this Astros series really could not have come at a worse time. They're hot. The Red Sox are going into Houston, coming off of a loss. You get one of those, I don't want to call it a sad flight, but certainly not a happy flight after stranding a million runners on base in a finale of a game that you really could have won. I don't like when people say should have won. If they should have won, then they would have. They could have won that game, though. They didn't. And now you have a hellaciously difficult series against the Houston Astros. We're going to dive deep into that one soon, but a little preview for you. They might even see Justin Verlander in game 3. So buckle up.
Yeah, I would feel the same way. Like, I'm happy with the split. They were able to split with, as Gordo said, I fully agree that this is the best team in the American League. The frustrating thing is these are more winnable games. I mean, you look at the last game that they had, the hit disparity was 11-3, and yet they lost 4-2. But there were some bright spots coming out of it. You know, the resurgent power of Jarren Duran and Rafi Devers. Tristan Casas looked good in his first series back. Didn't show any signs that he was injured. And the pitching went really, really well. Bayo had maybe his best start. Cutter looked good for the most part. So, optimistically, looking big picture, this is big. But as we talked in the last episode, it's getting to a point where, yeah, you can play this good, but you need a whole bunch of other scenarios to go down. So, yeah, overall, satisfied, but could have been better.
Yeah, and one place, Joe, you kind of talked about it real quick with Tristan Casas, and that's a good place to start is the Casas-Dom stuff. First off, Tristan Casas, yes, did look good, 5-for-13 in his first series back, which I think a lot of people are just going to like gloss over it or maybe get on him for not having any extra base hits, though he did almost hit a home run and flew out through the wall. So it's not like the power isn't there. Like that will come. It's good to see that his timing is not seemingly off. Like he came back and he looked pretty good and you feel good with him at the plate. But I don't know if I would have DFA'd Dom. And I know I say that with like love goggles because I love Dom Smith so much and I just like wanted him to be a part of this thing till the very end and like obviously reevaluate from there. Like what is your roster need going into next season? But I thought there would have been avenues to keep the guy, a really good clubhouse presence, a good player, certainly a better hitter than some of the guys they kept around. Though obviously you evaluate guys based on more than that, the guys they kept and like the guy who's on the roster today in the spot that Dom could have occupied is Mickey Gasper, who switch hitter can catch, play first, play second. That's kind of what there is to it. I think the catching thing is important to them just because of how they utilize Jansen and Wong and trying to use both of them in the same game with one of them at the DH and pinch hitting and burning one. And like, obviously you're putting yourself at risk when you pinch hit a catcher and burn them that your other guy gets hurt and then you have to go to an emergency catcher. So I get it, but just to put yourself in a situation where Dom could have helped this team, because I know that Alex Cora talked about there's not going to be a lot of spots for a left-handed first base only guy to help this team when you have Tristan Casas, who's a left-handed first base only guy. But today they pinch hit Mickey Gasper for Connor Wong in a bases loaded one out spot. And Gasper struck out. It was a matchup against a righty. And
tight game.
Yeah. Grand slam ties that game, base hit in the right spot, scores a couple. Rafaela ended up getting a hit in the very next at bat. So, if Dom's in that spot and Dom gets the knock there, like who knows? Maybe it's a different game. Like the Red Sox played okay today. They, like Joe said, 11-3. They out hit the Orioles. It somehow lose 4-1 or 4-2 with the ref Snyder homer. But just like one hit in one spot and just changed the game. And I would like Dom to be in that spot. And I would have liked Dom to be on this team. I think he's an important dude.
I wish we could have had the opportunity to lovingly explain to Dom Smith where he stands in the eyes of Red Sox fans. Because every once in a while, there's a guy who arrives to the team kind of unceremoniously. I think a good example of that would be like Willie Mo Pena, maybe. A guy who, wasn't a superstar or anything when he got here, but the fan base just fell in love with him. He had his moments. Nobody's under the impression that this is a superstar player by any means. In fact, it's more of a below average player. And you could say the same stuff about Dom Smith, but he had his moments. He came through when you needed him. He was a professional. And this fan base, for a variety of reasons, I felt like they just completely fell in love with this guy. And he reciprocated that love. He told us he loves being here. And it sucks to see him go. I actually kind of sort of disagree just because of what you just said, Gordo, with Cora saying there's not going to be many spots for a left-handed hitting first baseman. Sure, there was a niche situation today, but if you look down the line for the full season, there's probably not going to be many spots. That said, if he can pass through and come back to the Red Sox, maybe in AAA, just have him around in case he's needed. Wouldn't mind that one bit. Dom Smith is our guy. He's been nothing but nice to us. And like I said, this fan base, they really, truly like Dom Smith. And we all know how Boston fans are. Pretty fickle. And Texas wins, by the way, as I'm talking.
All right,
so the Twins just lost in the middle of my sentence. Thank you, Texas. Gordo, what were you going to say?
I said that's good. But what I was going to say, first off, I don't think... like. sadly for us, not sadly for him, because good for Dom. He's had such a good season that I don't think he's going to pass through waivers. I do think he's going to get a chance with another big league team. So good for him in that regard. I wish he could stay in the organization. But another thing that we didn't even talk about yet is that, you know, Tristan Casas, obviously he's looked good in his first three games back, and they said that he's not on like the trainer's report. This is a guy who's a full go, going to be out there every day. It's not like it's like day on, day off, 2 days on, day off. Like, it's not going to be like that. That said, Tristan Casas has talked about the pain that he's playing through. It was pretty well documented in AAA. I know that he's kind of like changed his story up a little bit, but it hasn't been whether or not he's feeling pain. It's just kind of the extent of the pain that he's feeling. So consider me a little, not skeptical, but just a little bit nervous that he could re-aggravate something, need a couple of days or maybe an IL stint at some point down the road. And because that's on my head, in my mind, Dom Smith would fit in well for those spots. He's like your Tristan Casas insurance in a way. And not to mention, all you really would have needed is for the roster to be a little bit wonky for 2 weeks, because the rosters expand come September. And if you want Mickey Gasper on the roster, you send him down right then and there. He's back up in 2 weeks and you can do what you want with the roster at that point. Because one of the guys you call up in September is going to have to be a bat. They only expand the pitchers by one spot.
Mm-hmm. I think the problem with keeping Dom at this point in the season, if this were June, I would totally agree with you. Like, Casas is just coming off the IL. He might, you know, re-aggravate something. But right now, you're in the middle of August, nearing the end of August, and you really don't have the space to keep a guy around just in case. You need guys who are going to contribute day in and day out. Guys like, I know he just got sent down, but like Sogard, I would keep over Dom Smith. I would keep someone like that, just because he has so much more versatility, he can do so many more things. And I hate talking bad about Dom Smith or saying like it's not that I don't want him on the roster. It's just at this point in the season, I think you have to take that risk that Casas is going to be the everyday guy. And on top of that, you also have Romy Gonzalez and Connor Wong and Mickey Gasper now, who have all played some first base this year. So it's just, I want to agree with you. I just can't do the mental gymnastics to find a spot for Dom Smith at this juncture of the season on the roster.
But that's part of the equation to me. Like, that's one part. And then you have the clubhouse stuff. You have how good he's been. Like, you have all of it and you factor it all in. And with the rosters expanding, that's another thing. It's like all of those things. It's they, and I'm not saying like you could make the argument on the other side, and the Red Sox certainly agree with the other side, but is the slight advantage in roster maneuverability and ability to play around with your catchers, is that worth it to lose Dom entirely from the organization? Because it's not like they'd lose Mickey Gasper entirely. They'd just send him down for 2 weeks. Dom Smith, they're losing entirely.
Yeah, I think it is, unfortunately. You have to win every game. Every little tiny advantage you can get, you have to take it if you're the Red Sox. You can't afford to lose close games. Like today, that's brutal. This is a game they should have won today. They out-hit the Orioles 11-3.
But there you go.
That hurt.
But there you go. There right there is an example of, because it's not just like having Dom Smith around just to like have the guy around because we like the guy. Like, today was an example of a time where he could have helped you.
Maybe. We don't know that. There's still, I feel like there's going to be far more situations where you need a guy like Gasper to throw in at second base.
Would you have rather had Gasper at the plate or Dom Smith at the plate?
Oh, Dom Smith, for sure. But I'm saying, I think you're going to see more opportunities where you're going to think, oh, I wish I had Gasper, or I wish I had a guy like Sogard, or anyone coming off the bench, Romy, someone like that. And of course, the obvious, you're obviously going to play Casas over him. So I just think there's more opportunities for the other guys, more of a likelihood that the other guys are going to be needed just because of the versatility alone, not because they're better at hitting or anything like that. They just do more.
I'm not going to disagree there. I do agree from a roster maneuverability standpoint, you are going to find more spots where you could use a switch hitter, a guy who can play three positions. Like, I get that. That said, you've got a guy running the show in Craig Breslow that's been in a clubhouse before, and we know how much Dom Smith has meant to that group. It is what it is. Like, the move is done, and he's not going to be here anymore, and we obviously wish him the best. He has been so good to not just like the team. He's been great to us, fan favorite. The Dom Smith sign, when he met the Dom Smith sign guy, they ripped off like, I think, 6 out of 8 games for wins after he met the Dom Smith sign guy. I have to go back and find that stat. But I think the Dom Smith energy played such a big role in how this went. And the way it started with, it was like him and Garrett Cooper coming in here. And the Red Sox definitely, you would have thought, could have used the right-hand bat more. But Dom Smith was so good that it just, like, what else were you going to do? Like, I get that Cooper was right-handed, but Dom Smith is, he's just being Dom Smith. And also, he earned that job. And I, damn, man, I don't know where this team is if he didn't fill in, if he didn't step up the way he did.
Yeah. Also, a very underrated, cool batting stance, the way he does his little wiggle with the bat. Ah, man.
Vibe king.
Yeah, he was so cool.
So let me ask you guys this then, because we all love Dom Smith. I think I have my favorite Dom Smith moment from his time at the Sox. Mine personally is that slide in Kansas City, the way he stole home. I'm trying to think of like the other great moments that he's had, because when you look at a guy in his role, he's normally not able to produce the way he is. And he just gives off this loving nature. Like he's so free spirited. And, you know, people, fans at least are recognizing this from us who get to be on the field and get to talk to him. We could sit in a bar and have a drink with him for an hour and a half.
Yes,
this guy is so approachable. He will always be a Red Sox legend. Let's just put it like that.
Sammy, hold on. Sammy,
this one's okay. He's a Red Sox legend. No, he's cool, man. He's one of the few guys, and you know, I don't want to get like too personal, but he was one of the few guys who would always ask us how we are, how you doing, how you feeling today. Like, that's so nice. He doesn't have to talk to us. Who the heck are we? But it's so hard to keep your biases out with a guy like this I haven't heard anyone say a single bad thing about Dom Smith. I was probably the most negative about him when the Red Sox first signed him. I was like, well, this guy's not very good. Look at his career numbers. He's bounced around. He was a former top prospect. This hasn't panned out. And months later, I'm like, you can't get rid of this guy. So yeah, man, it's a vicious business.
Yeah, it really is. And it's weird. I'm going over my notes and I'm realizing that this happened after the first game of the series, which feels weird. It feels like this happened before the series started. Maybe it's because it happened before the Friday game. It was a 4-game series and the first game was so unmemorable. Like, pretty much the only notable thing that happened in the first game, like obviously coming off that terrible finish to the Rangers series, was they get down and Chase Shugart comes in and resets the pen. And Cora talked about how important it was that he was able to do that. Obviously his big league debut, throws 3 innings and saves the pen. And obviously you saw in both the second and the third games of the series, but mainly the third game in the series, how important it was that he was able to get through that and leave everyone as fresh as possible. I'm sure in part that allowed them to be a little bit more aggressive with the opener in the third game of the series or second game of the series. It absolutely did, because if he has to come out of that game, pretty good bet that Bernardino is the one to maybe eat that last inning, just because they want Wink to be able to go longer. And then
I got breaking news.
What?
Give it to
Christian Campbell to AAA.
Oh my God. We had that scoop yesterday. We basically, we were on, for reference, we were on radio yesterday with Rob, and Rob arranged for Brian Abraham, the scouting director of the Red Sox, farm director, to come on and join the show. And I asked him pretty casually, like, hey, the big three get called up, Christian Campbell not called up. What does he have to show you to get called up? And he was basically like, yeah, you know, he's going to see AAA at some point. Like, basically, we're just trying to get him some more shortstop reps. And we were like, okay.
Yeah, he made it seem like he's staying down there to play shortstop. Psych! Anyway, let's get back on track. I just had to break that news. Where were we? Dom Smith. We love Dom Smith.
Yeah, we basically kind of went through the first game of the series. We can get into the second one.
One note on Shugart. What a unique body type for a pitcher. He's way undersized. Like, how many guys are, they were saying he's 5'9", and then they were kind of insinuating that that's a bit generous. The only other guy I can think of is Stroman, who sucks.
Shugart, and he was hitting 97 too, dude. Like, that ain't nothing.
He looks like a shortstop playing pitcher. Also, if we get Jansen and Shugart battery, That's double rec specs. Rec spec pitcher, rec spec catcher. You don't see that very often. That's huge.
Rec spec. Is that a real word?
Yeah, rec specs.
I always hear you say that and I always laugh.
It's not a real word. It's not a real word. It's a real term. Like people use rec specs. It's like sports glasses. Better than calling them goggles. Like when Eric Gagne was on the Dodgers, they'd be like, he wears goggles like he's friggin' swimming.
Spoggles. All right. Well, let's get into the second game. Tristan Casas returns and obviously big boost there. Dom or not, Tristan Casas coming back is an enormous boost for the Red Sox. And when he finds his power stroke, and honestly, I don't even want to say that he hasn't found it yet. Like it might literally be in there ready to go in Houston, but that's a big bat to have back. This was the game that I labeled the Gordo guarantee that the Red Sox were going to lose coming in. So you're coming off the terrible Rangers loss. You're coming off a less than ideal loss in the first game in which they were pretty much kicked to the curb in the fifth or sixth inning. And like, that was kind of that. Bats really didn't get going, but they step up and they put up two runs right off the bat against Corbin Burnes. Yes, Duran was an infield single and Raffy was a little blue, but you put two runs off. Right. Wow. I don't know why I can't say that specific.
You're so excited about this win that you can't even get the words out right now.
I'm so shocked. Like Willier had a huge double in the first and, you know, they open with Bernie and Kelly, which I don't know if I would have burned two pitchers in the first inning, two relievers in the first inning, especially like if the game goes south.
Kelly thing was weird because Kelly's gone multiple, not multiple innings, but more than three outs for the Red Sox a lot. And for a team that's kind of running on fumes, ish, not completely because Shugart helped out, but they're still not the most rested bullpen in the world. To use him for one out in the first inning, I didn't love that, but it worked.
Well, if Cora knew it was going to be a bullpen type game where a lot of relievers were going to get used, you have to start thinking about the day after and the day after that. Like, again, we talked about it an episode or two ago. Like, these series are all connected. All these games are connected.
It's the Gordo guarantee.
You're right.
These games will be connected.
And part of the reason that I gave the Gordo guarantee there, A, was the bullpen usage has been so gargantuan. Like, they've been using relievers out the wazoo lately. And
you said it so seriously. That's why I'm laughing, because you were like, that's why I gave the Gordo. Like, it's the way you just said that.
No, I gave it, man. The Gordo guarantee is a thing.
You made it sound like it's always been a thing. The way you just said it, like, yeah, I gave the Gordo guarantee. I didn't just come up with it in the moment. I gave it for that reason.
There's been literally one Gordo guarantee this year that I've labeled the Gordo guarantee. It was this particular game.
But it was a guarantee. Whoa.
Gordo guarantee lost.
Yeah, okay. Okay, yeah. Just didn't want you to take.
No, God, no, I will not. I will not. You can check.
What's the word where when people like who didn't serve in the military wear military clothing?
Oh, I don't know that word. We've talked about this before, though.
It's
a word.
Stolen valor.
Yeah.
Stolen valor. I didn't want to use steal valor from the prediction world.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm not doing that. They put up two on Burnes. Good for Bernie and Zach Kelly for getting through the first. They keep hitting Burnes. Eight runs off Corbin Burnes. The most earned runs that Corbin Burnes had allowed in a start previously this season was four. And the Red Sox scored eight.
And it was his bobblehead night in Baltimore. Whee! That's fun.
Damn, dude. That's like sucking on your birthday.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. That went in my ear the wrong way. But yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh,
I get Sammy, what you're saying.
You have a dirty mind.
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Get your head out of the fucking gutter.
I was thinking about food. Like sucking down food. Jesus.
Sucking down birthday cake. Yeah.
But yeah, that was that. You talk about guys making soft contact off of Corbin Burnes. That's kind of like when you get him, that's how you do it. You just put the ball in play. He's a cutter guy, like one of the best cutters in the world. So I figured, not that I thought the Red Sox were going to win this game. I don't want to make it sound like I'm rewriting what I said. I did not think they were going to win this game. But, you know, if you're facing a guy with a cutter who induces a lot of soft contact, probably a good thing to have blazing speed up and down the lineup. And the Red Sox use that, especially Duran right off the bat, actually, to start the game. So,
yeah, scoring. I give him full, that Willier Abreu double. That was huge.
Yeah, full marks for the Red Sox. That was a super, super. Was that the most unlikely win of the season? If you consider the context of the game, not only was it Corbin Burnes at home, you know, versus the Red Sox bullpen, was also coming off of an awful loss against the Rangers and then a total wet fart loss the night before where he just didn't really do anything at all.
I would say
the only thing that could have made it even harder is if Burns were a lefty. That's the only thing.
Yeah, I would say most unlikely, but I would also call it the most impressive. Not saying it's the game of the year, but the fact is, going into the game, we knew the factors. A beat up bullpen. Pitching in general looked like shit. And then the offense is still a little bit streaky, and you're going against the supposed AL Cy Young, one of the favorites for that. And the fact that they're able to just rattle one after another, like Duran in the first at bat, Abreu, and it just kept coming and going and going and going. And it didn't stop. Like, even when Burns was out, they continued. Their approach didn't change. They kept attacking, and they were able to launch some balls over the fence and really build that gap good enough. Like, literally, the pitching was in a struggle where we were at home and watching the game, and we were saying, they got to put up five runs. They got to give up a five. Because then the next inning, that lead shrinks. So they had an answer every single time. So it's the most impressive.
We're doing long division in our friggin' group chat. We're like, all right, if you score this many, you can go to this guy for maybe this many innings. Yeah. And then this guy's coming up for Baltimore, so you go to this guy in the bullpen. And then, but hey, that's why Cora's job is so tough. My God.
Well, that's why I hesitate to label it the most impressive. I will say it's the most unlikely, but I can't say it's the most impressive with the pitching, just because Cooper Criswell needs, in that spot, needs to give them more. This is a guy who got yanked in the fifth inning when he started in the second. Just really did not have it. The second time this year that he's gotten hit around in Baltimore. And then really just more of the same from Luis Garcia. I really don't want to harp on the negative stuff, but like I'm not going to say that was like the wrong trade of the moment, because I will not say that. I will not get on them for going above and beyond to acquire a guy that allowed one run in his previous 12 and two-thirds innings before getting there. I'm just not going to do it. That said, it hasn't worked. He's been terrible. His ERA, I wish I had the numbers in front of me, but it's in the teens, his ERA since getting here. He's gone 13 only one scoreless.
Pretty sure. 13 yeah, Gordo, yeah. You just alluded to it. It's the perfect example of a very good concept of a trade, and then the results just completely not falling. Like you said, he had good numbers on the year. He was very hot when they got him, and he just hasn't performed. Not only has he not performed, he's been abysmal, like shockingly bad. So I don't know what would you guys do with Garcia? I feel like for now, until like Hendricks and everyone, I feel like you just got to hope he figures it out. Like the thing that gives me hope is that he's been doing it for years. It's not like this is a guy who just a flash in the pan who
he's
maybe
been okay angel, for years.
He's been capable. I'm not saying he's been like a beast, but like it's not like a guy who the Angels had caught fire and then they sold high. This is a veteran reliever who's been, you know, he's produced at a modest level for years. It's not out of the question that he'll continue to do that. But man, you don't have much time if you're the Red Sox.
He came in with that 3.71 ERA, and I got the number in front of me. The ERA is now at 14.09.
That's with the Red Sox.
The Red Sox. Yeah.
I should preface 3.71 with the Angels, 14.09 with the Sox. And to answer the question, I feel like because of the trade, because of what you gave up to go get him, I feel like you just have to let it ride. You got to ride it out, because you're not going to DFA a guy that you traded three highly considered prospects. One, definitely. I think you just have to let him ride it out, because this is essentially what's been the pitching strategy all year long, because there are no reinforcements. You have to just let him figure it out himself.
Well, yeah, I do think you have to give him a little bit more time, and part of that is because there are reinforcements coming, but none are like available tomorrow or the day after that. Hendricks had his first rehab assignment today as we're recording on Sunday, and went well, and they're going to push Justin Slayton pretty fast to get back, so he's not going to be too long. But you've got Hendricks, Slayton, and we'll see if Cam Boozer gets a big league spot when he comes back, but that's potentially three guys coming back. So if Garcia keeps pitching like this, then no, there's no way he's going to make it to the end of the season. He will get DFA'd if he keeps pitching like this. But he's going to get like 3, 4, 5 at least more chances, just because of the way the roster shakes out. And we just have to hope that the Red Sox can get themselves in leads so that these chances are like they were in this game, where he can let up three runs and it doesn't kill you. But offense was great. you know, Duran bomb, Hamilton bomb, those were huge. Really gave the Red Sox the breathing room they needed to trust Luis Garcia there. Massa had the RBI late to after Jansen. It was, I believe, was after Martin let up the run to give Jansen a little bit more wiggle room. And Kenley Jansen, just an absolute monster. Locked down this game, locked down the third game. Just, oh my God, they're so lucky to have Kenley Jansen. Oh my God.
Oh yeah, man.
Me personally, I was questioning putting Martin and Kenley in, just because I understand why you would put them in, talking like the here and now. And
are you talking game three?
Game three. Yes. Here? Okay. Yes, game three, where it was 5-1, because it wasn't a safe situation, but with the bullpen as bad as it was, you understood why Martin and Kenley were in there. You know, I would have liked to have seen maybe like a Winkowski go in, he starts, and if things start to unravel, then you get Kenley up there. Because, yeah, the reports were coming out that he was available for game three, but still, in the stretch that the Sox have, you want to have as healthy a Kenley Jansen as possible. So I questioned it a little bit. They still won. Like, I'm not going to say, like, it's a giant red flag, and I'm going to say Cora made a stupid move. But I just didn't agree with it at the time. But they needed the game. They needed to lock it down, and especially the way Bayo started, you had to lock it down.
I hear you, Joe, but at this point of the year, I'm not even remotely thinking about the next day if I'm Alex Cora. I'm thinking win tonight, worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll see who's available and who's not. Like, I hope that the entire Red Sox team is in tunnel vision mode. Just like, for example, right now, I hope they're only thinking about game one against the Astros, not that they have the Diamondbacks afterwards, like just one at a time. This is the most one at a time part of the season that you're ever going to get to. So I get your concerns, but I'm like, just win the game, figure it out tomorrow.
It's also so situational. Like, the Martin and Jansen conversations, they get looped together, but they're different, because when Martin was warming up, they were up by one run, if I'm not mistaken. Or no, it was two runs. They were up by two runs, and then they ended up getting a couple more to make it four. And it was really quick. They got the two runs, and then boom, out, like, Wink was up the inning before, but there wasn't enough time to get Winkowski up and going again. So I get why they had to put Martin in. I personally would have gone to Wink and then used Jansen if you needed to, but I it's such a 50-50 call. I it's not something I feel strongly about either way, but I want to back up a little bit, because Brian Bayo in this game and in the last pretty much the last 2 months, he has been their best pitcher. He has been. He has, I'll pull up the stats, but it is now seven consecutive starts for Brian Bayo with three earned runs or less. They've won eight out of his last nine starts. Like, you talk about a guy who you want to be a stopper. That's been Brian Bayo. Since in his last seven starts, he has a 3.57 ERA.
There you go. Yeah, now it's a trend. At first, when we were just talking about July, I was thinking, okay, good sign. We'll see if it continues. Now I'm at the point where I'm comfortable saying this is a good trend. He's settling in, and I feel very confident when he's out there. By the way, kind of sort of off topic, did you guys notice he's yoked? I did not realize how jacked Brian Bayo is. Like, I don't know if it was because everyone was sweaty and shiny, but he...
That's what I thought. I thought that's why that came to your mind.
Like, Popeye arms out there. I thought that earlier in the year and then kind of tossed that theory out the window, but he might be kind of thick out there. Throws hard, throws 99 sometimes. So,
yeah, I mean, he that's part of why I was semi-confident that it could continue, is that his arm wasn't slowing down. His velocity wasn't ticking down at all. He was getting better. He was throwing harder. The one thing we still haven't quite seen, and honestly, it just shows what his ceiling can be, is we still haven't seen him hone in on that sinker command. The slider has taken a huge step forward, and he lost that changeup for a little bit, and it's back in a big way now. But we still haven't seen his get-me-over slider be a true get-me-over slider. Like, he still walks too many guys on that pitch, and he walks the bottom of the order. There's room for this guy to grow from here. It's just, it's so encouraging. And when you look at the starting pitching outside of the Criswell thing, this series, Pivetta, his velocity was back up. He looked okay. It wasn't like the best Pivetta we've seen, but it's really encouraging considering the velocity that we saw from him before he had the basically 10-day layoff. And then you've got a really good start from Bayo here. And in the fourth game, you got a good start from Cutter for a back-to-back where obviously he didn't finish it again. But compared to what we've been seeing from him, it's a lot better. 5 1/3 perfect in his last start and got better this time. You factor in the improving starting pitching. Obviously, they need to figure out what they're going to do with the fifth spot. And that's something that I think we're going to talk about in tomorrow's episode. But they'll figure that out. But if you've got these four guys, how results-wise has been good. Four starting pitchers. The offense is finally basically all the way healthy. And I say basically because Story's not back. But outside of that, this offense is healthy to the point where I don't even like if you think about where does Trevor Story fit into this, and that's not a discussion that we really have time for today, but he doesn't exactly fit in perfectly. Like a good player would have to get benched, but the offense is here. The starting pitching, 4 out of the 5 spots is here. They just have to figure out how to settle in the bullpen. It really does hurt that Garcia isn't good enough to deepen the bullpen and shorten the length that you need the starters to go, because you basically have 3 relievers that you can count on right now. I love Lucas Sims, by the way. Him in game 3, that's not something that we should brush over. That was sick. He is good.
Yeah, he's been put in a lot of tough spots too, by design, because he's kind of a fireman. That's his role in Cincinnati as well. But yeah, that's a really, he's been a good pickup. Kind of the same, a mirror of Luis Garcia. Both of them, good concept in terms of trade. Relief pitchers who have had good seasons and are hot at the time of acquiring them, but they have gone completely opposite ways. Good to see Lucas Sims pitching well. Also, with the Red Sox bullpen, overall this year, it's been pretty strong, but the weakness would be left-handed pitching. Like they have Bernardino. He's been a little bit up and down. Boozer, a little bit up and down. Bailey Horn, don't even get me started. Lucas Sims has reverse splits. So for a bullpen he doesn't have reverse splits. He has kind of even splits. So for a bullpen that doesn't have the best crop of left-handed pitching ever, having a righty that can get lefties out, he's a big-time weapon. So I'm very happy with what I've seen from Lucas Sims. But we still haven't seen him go completely nuts on the mound yet. Like, I want to see...
He'll yell, but it's not... Yeah, you haven't seen, like, the peak Lucas Sims, like...
Yeah, like when you Google Lucas Sims, if you're listening... Google Lucas Sims and a picture of him screaming on the Cincinnati Red. Various photos of him screaming as a member of the Cincinnati Red should come up. I want to see that at Fenway Park. You can save it. Save it for Fenway. Fire everyone up. That's all we need from Lucas Sims. Then it's just a perfect acquisition.
To your point about the left-handed pitching, they don't have elite left-handed relievers right now. The one thing that I do like is that the late inning guys can all get both out. Like you said it with Sims. Martin, obviously you trust against anyone. And Jansen honestly might even be better against lefties. So it's like, it's not something that kills you late, but it does hurt because a lot of the starting pitching hasn't been going beyond 5 innings. I know Hauk and Bayo have been going a little bit deeper, but Pivetta, they're going to be a little bit careful with coming off of whatever he was dealing with the fatigue. And they're certainly being careful with Cutter, and they're going to need it every time. Criswell or whoever gets that spot later on, anytime they start, you're going to need those middle innings and you're going to have to pick matchups. And that's why they're going to keep going to guys like Bailey Horn with the lefties up, because if you're going to use bullpen from the fifth inning on, like those guys are going to have to get used at some point. So you might as well pick the right pocket. I want to quickly run through the fourth game. There's really not much to say about it. Joe said it in the beginning. I mean, the 11-3 hit discrepancy is the story of this game. Cutter was good. Got bit by an Adley long ball and put a couple of guys on at the end, but like outside of that, really no complaints from me. It was just a runners in scoring position thing. The Albert Suarez nonsense pissed me off royally. The fact that he would throw the same 96 mile an hour fastball in the same part of the zone over and over and over and over again, and they just couldn't hit it, particularly with guys in scoring position. It was frustrating to me. 11 hits, they're gonna be fine. Obviously, it's put up or shut up time, which is why it's like still a little bit frustrating. Like if they had this game in May, I'd be totally 100% unbothered, because it's like, okay, like they outplayed Baltimore today. Like it is what it is. They should have had 3 out of 4, but the fact that they got 2 out of 2 is fine. Like it's still the mindset, but like, God damn, they're 3.5 out. It's like, ugh, just like Gordo, one big hit.
Your guy Suarez. So he threw 99 pitches. 60 of them were fastballs.
And they were all probably in that same spot.
Yeah, I'm looking
the,
right
sometimes
now.
Sometimes he missed at the face. He missed at
they
the
were
face.
All, yeah, pretty close to the same spot. They're all up-ish, kind of. Yeah, up. Which view is this? Kind of like
how,
up.
How many fastballs in the middle quadrant or lower did he throw? He got O'Neill to swing and miss at a middle quadrant fastball at one point. I can't remember a single
middle quadrant one. Or lower. One, yeah. Two, three, four, five, six, seven, and then two or three that were borderline. Probably like 10 of the 60. So not many.
Oh my God. So yeah, that, I mean, that pissed me off, but like, it is what it is. I don't know.
Albert. Like, who is that guy? That guy. I'm like, who the heck is Albert Suarez? And this, that guy on Twitter was like, you don't know who Albert Suarez is? Dude,
he has good numbers this year.
Nobody like, knows who Albert Suarez is. He's journeyman who didn't we find he pitched some other league?
He was not in America for like the last like 5 years.
He hasn't pitched in Major League Baseball since 2017. Get the fuck out of here with
it. Yeah, he's had a good year, but yeah, fuck off with this shit.
Yeah, it's Albert Suarez. It sounds like an NPC. It's like when you do season mode on a video game and you start getting the fake players at it. It's like, you have Albert Suarez. Who's this?
Yeah.
But yeah, he pitched well. I got to give him credit.
No, yeah, got to give him credit. I'm trying to figure out where he pitched. Okay, you ready? You want to hear where he pitched?
Wait, let me guess. KBO.
Does not... I've got the teams. One of them is certainly not KBO. Oh, one of them is, though. He pitched in the KBO the last 2 years, and the 3 years before that, he was... So he was with the Samsung Lions for the last 2 years, and that's in Korea. And the 3 years before that, he was with the Tokyo Yakult Swallows, which is in Japan.
Yeah, NPB. I think the Swallows is NPB. That was just a lucky guess, but...
That's who we're dealing with. Obviously, we've seen guys go there and find it, and it looks like he has, because he's had a good year in Baltimore. So, good for him. Bad for us. I guess the last thing I want to touch on, just because we haven't already, before we get into the series prediction for Houston, is Masataka Yoshida kind of being like all the way back. He's got like a 930 something OPS dating back to June 24th. So that's not a small sample size. This is basically been the Yoshida that we saw early summer last year. He's healthy. He's doing it here. It took me a while to get on board as to believe like this is going to continue, but I mean, it's just kind of undeniable at this point, and it's been huge for the Red Sox. They're still not playing him against lefties, and I think that's okay as long as Danny Jansen and Connor Wong are hitting. I would understand trying it later, but yeah, he's just been all that, and yeah, he's making the Red Sox job hard in a good way in the offseason, because maybe he's been so good like that they would want to keep him and find a way to like platoon the DH next year instead of getting the right-handed bat. But if they do want to move on and they do want to get a big right-handed bat to be the DH, I don't think you'll have a problem finding a taker for this guy with the way he's been playing.
Yeah, I mean, this is the guy who we thought we were getting when the Red Sox signed Masataka Yoshida, an on-base percentage machine. The only difference is we didn't think he'd be a DH, but whatever, not a huge deal. Yeah, just puts the ball in play, rarely strikes out, takes his walks. It makes the lineup so much better when you have a guy like that who just slaps the ball all around the field. And a little bit of power, too. It's not like he's just hitting singles. He's taking the ball deep a few times. I know the power numbers on the season aren't great, but in this stretch, they've been pretty good. So,
yes,
you know, credit to Yoshida. This was, I feel like I don't deserve credit for making him my pick to click earlier in the season, because I completely jumped off that boat midway through. But it's good to see him kind of bounce back. I still lean towards probably moving him in the offseason just because of the fit, not because of the skill. He's clearly talented. We all agree on that. But yeah, I mean, he's making the Red Sox job hard, like you said, Gordo. And that's not a bad thing. It's a good problem to have.
And he doesn't seem like the way you see him swing, that he doesn't have that kind of power, because it's just so smooth and it feels so effortless. But he's done a really good job of getting contact and not being that standard ground ball to second base where we used to make fun of him for the beginning of last year and parts of the beginning of this year as well. Just being able to like find his footing and being able to display the power and just making contact. That's just the biggest thing for me, is he's making contact, he's putting the ball in play, and he's limiting the ground balls. That's what helps me be impressed with the Yoshida.
Yeah, the quality of contact has been completely different. You see him spraying it all over the field. Like basically Yoshida early this year, it was roll over to second and pop out to left. And the people who think that it was all bad luck before will reference those pop outs to left and say he was still spraying it. He wasn't spraying the ball. He was rolling over and he was popping out to the opposite field. And those were basically the two outcomes. He is a different hitter now than he was. And he's been so good that his season batting average is .298. Like, this guy's going to hit over .300 this year. And his season OPS is .813. Like, that's a guy who in June had a mid 600s OPS and was hitting like .250. So yeah.
You can boil it down to luck all you want. Like, I get why people say that. He's not crushing the ball every single time. And on the year, he's 54th percentile outs above average. But when you don't strike out at all, you don't whiff much at all, and the ball is constantly in play, you're going to get those kinds of hits. It's just a product of putting the ball in play. It's like when people chirp Jaren Duran. Oh, he gets a lot of hits on soft tip balls. Yeah, because he has crazy speed. It's the same concept with Yoshida, but it's the contact. He just gets so many opportunities to find those hits. Of course they're going to fall in. So I don't think it's fair to call it luck when the guy's doing his job, putting the ball in play. So I agree with you, Gordo. It's not fair to put him in that box, because luck is natural when you're always putting the ball in play and you're not striking out and you're also walking.
And your quality of contact is as good as it's been, because if you're going to roll over balls, like, yeah, you're going to occasionally run into that single in between first and second, and he did. But now, like, when I say spraying, like, you're seeing line drives over third base, like, you're seeing crushed balls to both the left center and the right center gap, effortless balls to the 376 mark that go off the wall. You see him attempting more of those A swings. I know Middlebrooks on the broadcast talked to, the driver. You're seeing him take that swing more because it's working. So we've all been so impressed with what Masa's done, and just, God, I hope it continues to the end of the season, makes the Sox job both easier and harder this offseason, and gives them a legitimate shot to make a run, because when he's on and the bats are all healthy, you slot Tristan Casas and Tyler O'Neill back into this lineup, it's a scary group when they're all clicking. But let's get into this preview. We're going to be really quick with this because with a four-game series, we had a lot to talk about. Houston, 67-56. They just took 2 out of 3 from the White Sox. They have won 10 of their last 11. This team is on fire. All right. This is not the Astros of April or May. This is the Astros. This is the good Astros. First game, Tanner Houck versus Yusei Kikuchi, a lefty. He's got a 2.7 ERA since he got traded to the Astros. They clearly knew something, because he had 6 ERAs in the previous 2 months before the trade. He has 24 strikeouts in 16 and two-thirds innings since the trade. Second game, Nick Pivetta versus Ronel Blanco, who you saw the Sox face him. They got to him. He was out of there by the 5th inning, but then he went 6 shut versus Tampa Bay. He did get hit by a comebacker off of his non-throwing finger, so he's day-to-day with that, but he's listed to make the start, so I don't think it's a big deal. Third game is the Cooper Criswell game. He's been announced as the starter. We'll see if there's any sort of opener. I don't think there will be, because Altuve and Bregman are righties, but we'll see. Versus Justin Verlander, who has not pitched, or Justin Verlander's TBD, but we believe it's going to be Verlander. He hasn't pitched since June 9th. He has a 3.95 ERA this year. He only threw 57 pitches on his rehab stint, so we'll see how far he can go into the game. Maybe 80. We'll see. First game back. Hitters, we really don't need to go over much here. You saw what it was when the Sox faced him a week ago. Don't pitch to Yordan. Be careful with Bregman. And be careful with Yiner Diaz, and just attack Altuve and hope he doesn't kill you. Let's get a quick score update on the predictions, and then we will run through those real quick.
Gladly, because myself and Pat correctly predicted a 2-2 series for Baltimore. Sammy and Gordo went with the 1 out of 3. So the standings have Sammy still in the lead with 13, Pat in second with 10, myself in third with 9, and Gordo taking care of the basement with 7.
I will always be wrong, and that's why I'll lead us off. And I'm going to say the Sox are going to take 1 out of 3. I think they win against the lefty, but then lose the next 2. Okay, weird. I don't know why I don't have no justification for that. I'm just going with it.
I think the Red Sox take 2 out of 3 for some reason. I don't know why. I feel crazy saying that. I think they're going to win the Verlander game for sure, the third game. Which one do I think they're going to win? I think they'll win the first game, lose the second game, win the third game. So win, loss, win. And this is with this, to be clear, this is not a very confident pick by me. A lot of my picks I felt pretty good about. This one don't feel great, but I'll put it at 55% confidence. Lock it in.
Hey, that's over 50%. Pat did submit his picks. He says the Sox are going to go 2-1 in this series. It's weird. Everyone's like rarely optimistic about this one. I am going to say that they win 2 out of 3, and I'll copy Sammy here. I think I like him in the first game, and I like him against Justin Verlander. I think that third one's going to be a high scoring affair, kind of similar to, not as similar as that Baltimore game too, but I feel like that's a back and forth kind of type of game.
Yeah, like it's going to be a lot of bullpens in there because Criswell, who knows how deep he's going to go, and Verlander, I'm sure, won't go deep. So we'll see. Hopefully the Sox can get that. That'd be a big one to get. Come off that series and come home. They have an off day. Happy off day. Go to Arizona. But let's move forward. Pat's not here, so it's time for Crystal Bomb. Bomb it. Joe, give us a score update. What do we got?
Gladly, because this was one of our better series. All but one of us scored points on this one. Pat did not come through with his wild Tristan Casas pick. I went with the crazy David Hamilton pick, which I did not think was going to work, but it did. Gordo used his Raffy pick correctly, and Sammy went with Thick Willie. So Sammy's still in the lead with 18, Gordo with 17, Pat with 8, and me with 5. And Pat has submitted his pick, and he went with Connor Wong.
Sammy, I want you to make your pick first.
Okay, so I can't pick Thick Willie, I can't pick Devers. I'm going to go with, I'm thinking, give me Jaren Duran. I think he's heating up right now. I could see him going Oppo Taco into the by the way, that Houston, what's it, Crawford boxes? Yeah. Holy shit. We give the Yankees crap for having a short porch in right field. Whatever the Astros have in left field, I will go as far to say it might be worse.
Careful, Sammy. Careful. We've got the Green Monster. Careful.
But the Green Monster is 1,000 feet tall, so it at least takes away home runs. This one.
There's
this
tall too.
I know it's a little bit elevated, but it's not the Green Monster. This is absolutely absurd. You remember that home run Devers hit?
You're walking the tightrope off
of Verlander.
I do.
Ridiculous. But anyway, yeah, I think Duran's going to pop the ball up, slam his bat, be like, God damn it. And then it'll be a home run, a 306-foot home run.
All right. I want Joe to go next. I'm really stuck between two guys that I want to pick, and I don't know which one I want to pick. So I'm hoping Joe takes one and just makes the decision.
Well, you know what? If one of your guys is going to be throwing another curveball, because it worked for me with Hamilton, as Gordo said, as Sammy said, the left field porch is a perfect for righties and perfect for Romy Gonzalez. I'm taking Romy to go deep.
Wow.
All right, Joe. I like these picks. I don't like that you didn't take one of Casas or Tyler O'Neill. Man. I think I'll go with
I forgot that Casas was an option because this whole season pretty much he hasn't been an option. So yeah. You just said that and I kind of was like, oh shit, that's right. But go ahead.
Well, you gotta see him hit one first.
I'm not gonna see him hit one first. I'm gonna go with him there. I don't know. I don't know why. I have a good feeling. He's seen the ball well. We'll see him get his power swing. So give me Tristan Casas. Sammy, final segment. What do we got?
It's your favorite segment. It's guys being dudes.
Yeah.
All right. So we just did the Astros. So this is going to be a little bit tricky for you guys. I won't go over the guys we're banning because I think we already know. No obvious picks. And no Jeff Bagwell because we went over him already. Who would like to go first?
I can do it.
Gordon, go.
I'm going to pick Jed Lowry here, and I'm going to do this one and ask a couple of trivia questions. First off, how many seasons do you think he played major league games with the Red Sox?
With the Sox?
4.
I want to say like a year and a half.
It's 4, which, Sammy, you got it right. That shocked me because it never felt like he
got... Number 12.
Yeah, he was. It never felt like he truly made it with the Sox. It just felt like he was like always a minor leaguer who like kind of would come up and be okay. But you know, 4 years with the Red Sox, none of them full seasons. But now the next question: what was his highest OPS with the Red Sox?
722.
Joe, what do you think?
I'm thinking like somewhere in the 800s.
He had a 907 OPS in 55.
Holy crap!
What? When the hell was that? Where was I?
I think that I should have written down what year was. I think it was his third season, though, if I remember right. But he had an interesting
Martian helmet. Was he one of those guys who wore the double flapped helmet that looked like a Martian? Yeah, I love that. That's old time.
Yeah, he did. So his career arc, Boston, Houston, Oakland, Houston, Oakland, Mets, Oakland. So weird career arc.
He was good for the A's. I forget which stint it was, but he was nasty for that. I think he hit third for them in a playoff year. And I remember he was always a good bat. His defense was like so-so, kind of shaky, but he could play all around the field. Good ball player, though. I like Jed Lowry. That's a good baseball name, too. Jed.
Yeah, it was like him, Moss, and Reddick all on that same Oakland team.
Yeah, seriously.
I'll go next.
Season, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll go next with this one. I'm going to go with someone who's he's well known for the Sox, but you might not know him as a Houston Astro. JD Martinez started his first three seasons with the Astros and was basically, I'm not going to say he was like a scrub, but basically like he was nowhere close to being the major league player. Okay, we'll call him a scrub. He was a scrub in Houston. and then he went to Detroit. Made his name there. He goes to Arizona and then eventually the Red Sox. So just someone he wasn't known for the Astros. So that's why I want to throw it out there. Justinus Martinez.
Yeah, nice move, Houston.
I like it. He wasn't really a scrub. Okay, fine. He was a scrub. They DFA'd him.
You guys know more than I do, so I'll give it to you.
All right. My guy is a cautionary tale. And we already got excited about Christian Campbell. We've been talking about the big three a lot. Teal, Anthony, Meyer, a lot of good talent in that system. But they don't all hit. Not every top prospect pans out. And my pick, you guys might know who I'm going for. Kyle Weiland was a very highly regarded pitching prospect in, I think, like the early 2000s, probably like 2006 and 7. For the Red Sox, really good right-hander in the minors, and just did not pitch well in the majors. He got called up in 2011, the Red Sox, and he just got beat up from the jump. He pitched 7 games, 7.66 ERA, just absolute disaster. And, you know, there's guys who don't pan out and become, like, you know, a relief pitcher. Like Daniel Bard was supposed to be a great starter. It didn't work out. He becomes a great closer. Okay, he's not a bust. Not what you thought you were getting, but still a valuable player. This guy, Weiland, just couldn't hang in the majors whatsoever. Goes to Houston the following year, 2012. Keeps getting beat up. 3 games, 6.62 ERA. And then in 2014, he comes back for 4 more games, and he has a 1.5 ERA, but that was it. That was it for him as a 27-year-old. I think he also dealt with injuries as well. So there he is. Yeah. Just a cautionary tale. I mean, like, I don't want to say don't be excited about prospects, but you can't put all your eggs in the prospect basket. This guy, Kyle Weiland, Henry Owens, Alan Webster, a lot of pitchers don't pan out. So kind of a sad guys being dudes. I hope he's enjoying life now. He made it to the majors. That's more than any of us can say. So that's my guy, Kyle Weiland. Be careful with prospects.
Joe just pulled up his picture. Dude looks like he's ready to eat a carrot.
Hey. He's good, like, teeth, bro.
Chonk, chonk. Yeah, I think that's why I went there. But yeah, dude's ready to munch on some. What do carrots have? It's like vitamin. Is it vitamin D?
I believe vitamin D.
Oh, I'm not about to say that. I take it back.
They help to maintain your eyesight. Actually, a funny story. So you guys know, Gordo, you know I wear contact lenses / glasses. I have really bad eyesight. And when my eyesight started going bad, I think I was like 14 or 15, I heard that carrots help with eyesight.
Yes. But
they help maintain your eyesight. They don't help make it better, which is the part I didn't grasp. But I went with my mom to the supermarket. I got a whole bag of baby carrots, ate the entire like family-sized bag in one day, thinking that my vision was going to improve. And I felt so sick.
How old were you?
Probably like 14. Like, I was an idiot. God. I was in middle school. Yeah. Jeez, middle school or like freshman in high school. Like, total like idiot brain mode of your life. And I was like, oh, this is it, man. I understand science. I'm going to buy. It was so many carrots. It didn't work. My eyesight just got worse. So,
jeez. Well, on that note, thanks for tuning in. Eat your carrots. Just like Kyle Weiland does, he would recommend it as well. But thank you for tuning in to Play Tessie episode 116. We appreciate it. Before you go on, go about your day, do something else, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. Rate us 5 stars. We really appreciate it when you do those things. As always, we're on YouTube, on the WEI page, on the Play Tessie playlist within it. Thumbs up there. Go back to your podcast platform. Subscribe. Play Tessie on all the socials, Twitter and Instagram, at Play Tessie. For Sammy, for Joe, it's Gordo here for Play Tessie episode 16. Big series coming up. We say that every episode, but all of these series are big. Woo, we'll be in your ears tomorrow, though. We'll be talking some socks tomorrow for you guys. Till then, thanks for tuning in. Play Tessie. Toodaloo.